Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And today, I have a guest on who started his SEO career at the tender age of 15. And now, many years later, he has worked himself up to become the Performance Marketing Director at the UGC agency. Please welcome Corey Beavers. Hi, Corey.
Hiya, Mark. You okay?
I am, thank you. Just so people watching this and listening to this understands your background and what's going on, could you give us like a whirlwind tour of where you started your career to where you are now and that journey?
Yeah, most certainly. Started out at 15, like you mentioned, as an apprentice for a digital marketing agency based in Liverpool. Did that for a number of years and went on to work for another digital agency in Manchester. Who've now actually grown to, I think, 70 plus members of staff. I was there starting too. So there was me and somebody else. We were their starting team. And I left there after 9 months to set up my first SEO agency. Later selling that, dabbled in a lot of e-commerce. Was fortunate enough to sell another e-commerce venture. And then went into doing contracts for an influencer marketing agency based in Manchester. And following there, meeting my current business partner. Then he went off to go and work elsewhere for a year and a half. And we randomly ended up getting back in touch with one another. And he was flying, I think he'd flown to Manchester. And obviously we got talking and mentioned the idea, and the rest is history. Now we're co-founders of the UGC agency, working with, you know, some really amazing clients. We're getting in some really amazing clients. It's gone well. That's probably a short-winded version of the last 10 years.
Wonderful. I mean, starting out so young, do you think that's been an advantage for you?
I think definitely now I have the age and experience to showcase what I can do. But I think the problem is with a lot of young people, and I still see it to this day and age, is a lot of the older generation kind of, not kind of dismember you, but, you know, they kind of look at you with lack of experience, lack of so on. So having to prove yourself so much at a young age, I think me having to do that was what's got me to where I am, because it made me work the extra hours, the getting rid of my weekends, the not going out with the friends, this is bad to say, but, you know, you go further away from being attached with your family, from seeing them every other weekend to seeing them once every 6 months, because you've got things to do. And I think that in itself is what gave me the advantage of where I'm at now. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily just because of starting young. It's the reason, it's the reasonings of starting young that give you the hunger to overwork, and the fact that we're young, we can do it. We can do it.
All right. So now what are you, 25, 26 or how old?
Yeah, 25.
So you have quite a, you know, high level job. Do businesses that work with you see you any different than any other director because of your age?
No, I wouldn't say so now. I think a lot more people over the years have got used to seeing more and more young people succeeding in this industry. You know, when I started out 10 years ago, it was a rare case. You might have the odd YouTuber that got famous and that was it. You know, I used to tell people, oh, I'm learning SEO. Back 10 years ago, people were like, what is SEO? You know, now in this day and age, everybody wants to be an SEO. Everybody wants to start ranking websites on different search engines. And, you know, it's the whole industry as a whole, as you know, has just changed so much in terms of the last 10 years. So I think now more and more people are used to seeing younger people, and I think a lot more people have a lot more respect. But compared to me back when I was 17, 18, 19. Personality-wise, is a huge difference. The way I am, the way I speak, the way that I deal with people, you know, as we're all young once, and we all, you know, we get a little bit excited and giddy over the topics of what it is that we're learning and we're doing. And it's that carries away. Whereas obviously, as you get older, you mature and, you know, you learn from a lot of lessons, basically, and a lot of failures.
So for you personally, what are some of those learnings and failures? Can you just explain, without going into too much detail?
I think one of the biggest ones that I can put forward to somebody, starting out in the middle of, coming to the end of any career in digital, is there's a lot of silver, shiny things on the internet, a lot of them. Too many of them, in fact. And there's always that next craze. And you know, it's like ideas are like buses. There's another one every 10 minutes. And yeah, you have to be careful and you have to be able to build a solid wall. And if I think that would be one of the hardest things that I've had to overcome over the years, because I see something, I fall in love with it straight away. Or if, you know, if I found an idea and I can see the steps of how to do that, you kind of blind yourself to everything else that needs to actually be done. And you start running away with something when, in fact, it's this plate spinning that needs the attention to continue spinning. Stop trying to set up more plates to spin, sort of thing. And that has been a big challenge of mine, especially, you know, I've got very bad, you know, ADHD and I hyper-focus into these things. And sometimes my brain can just escalate off and next minute I'm working relentlessly and not sleeping, trying to get this new idea done when this other idea here is still half unfinished because of the shiny thing. So, locking yourself away from other things on the internet is probably the biggest one that I can suggest.
Yeah, I think I hear it so many times. You know, people start something and then they got this other idea and nothing ever gets finished. You know, it happens an awful lot moving forward. And I just think that, you know, the one thing that I learned is consistency. You know, you can't start something, then give up after 10 minutes type of thing and move on to the next. And it's that approach, you know. So for you, do you think now you're sort of focused, it's made a huge difference?
I do, and I have three minor examples of this. First example was the first time I've ever properly learned this was during the pandemic. As you know, I jumped on the hand sanitizer trend, and me and my friend started making it. And my goal with that was to solely sell one size bottle with one product with one. Scent, one, everything, just focus on getting that one thing correct. And we did that and we scaled that. And fortunately enough, after 9 months, we had 32 members of staff, 4 units in North Wales, and turned out to be a very healthy business at the time. And that we only started introducing different variations of bottles by the time we generated, I'd say, $750,000 in turnover. You know, it we didn't do it, oh, we've made 20 grand on the 50 milliliters, let's jump on the 500 milliliters and expand our turnover. That wasn't the case of the story. The story was, no, we nail this, get this right, and until we can set up the infrastructure is when we build upon. And then an example is after I sold the factory, because I was lost and I didn't know what to do, that was the time of my life where I was starting to spin these plates because I had nothing to clench onto. I had nothing that I really fully believed in. I had a lot of ideas and a lot of, you know, there's someone else that I met during this period of time that you know very well, Josh Peacock. And he was somebody that even said to me, Corey, you need to slow down. Like, you know, you're doing all these different things. And it was right, totally right. But the problem that I was foreseeing was, What is it that I do put all this time and energy in that I can see overcomes everything else? So after working for that agency, the influencer agency, when I met Alex, my current partner, our goal with what we do was we don't sell a list of services. We don't sell, we sell a strategy, and we focus on selling this one individual strategy as a business. We're just shy of 12 months old. Well, we're actually 12 months on paper, but we technically didn't start working for the agency. So we're less than 12 months old. We've worked with some amazing brands. We've just closed some really big brands recently. You know, the portfolio of work that we're doing at the minute is brilliant. You know, just to kind of name drop one in particular, who's a really big name in this industry, Gary Vaynerchuk. You know, we work directly with his agency, VaynerMedia. You know, that's just one of the many names that we've managed to close in this short amount of time, and all because of focus. And that's what I'm trying to get at here. It's all because we didn't try and sell this additional service, or this client wanted email marketing, so did we try and fulfill it? No, we passed that to somebody else and we carried on doing what we knew was best. And you know, the proof is in the pudding, sort of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely it does. Now, you mentioned there that you work with some well-known brands and names. Now, how do you go about actually getting work like that with these top, you know, brands when, you know, there's, you know, these big agencies all around you? What's the sort of, like, not sales strategy, but what's your way in?
I think personally, a lot of these big brands are getting sick of a lot of these big agencies that are tackling a little bit of everything, because there is a few very good agencies out there, and I'll hold my hand up, there is some brilliant agencies out there. But then I also see other big agencies out there that have lost the heart and the light of what of the reason why it was started. You know, I see a lot of these agencies just turning into these money machines, and these they have these offices, they have these staff. His bum needs paying for to be on that chair, and her bum needs paying for to be, and all of that, and you know, it becomes into, oh, we need to upsell this, and we need to do this, and we need to, you know, because I have worked with a lot of different agencies, and I think a lot of big brands are going to the smaller agencies because they know that there's a lot of heart there, and they go into these specialists, they go into freelancers, they go into, you know, I've got a few friends now that are freelancers, and they've done some work for some amazing brands recently. And even I was looking at them going, how have you bagged them? You're a freelancer, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, people are wanting the experts. And I think it kind of comes back to what I said of, we've specialized and focused on one service. So a lot of our clients, they come through the SEO work that I've done through the website. A lot of clients come through word of mouth from other work that we've done. Clients come from friends of myself and my co-founder, of people we've worked with in the past who know us, or, you know, friends of family, and we've been referred to them because of, you know, what we talk about. And yeah, I think it does all come down to that one line of focus. If you start telling people that you're doing this, and then you're doing this, and then you're doing this, people stop telling other people because they get sick of how many times it's changing. But if you're still focused on that one main thing, you're known for that. So, you know, it's like, oh, well, speak to this guy because he does that. He's done it for so many years. Not, well, this guy started it 3 weeks, and people don't talk like that. So, yeah, I think it comes down to, again, removing the shiny things, if you will.
Yeah, definitely on that. Now, because you do hyper focus on one thing, right? Do you think that one thing is important for you to be known as an agency for?
Most certainly. It differentiates us from other competitors out there. It really truly does. You know, we're able, what we've done here is we've found a service within the marketing industry that is growing, that at the time was slightly unheard of. And was only just kind of starting to be realized as we was realizing it, because we was working for an influencer agency. So user generator UGC content was at the core of the influencer world. So the moment that we started getting a taste where, hold on a minute, we can pay this influencer a fraction of the price for not jumping on the bandwagon of their reach, the piggybacking off of their reach, we can solely just get the content. It's a fraction of the cost of influencer. And on top of that, the reach that they're charging for, well, we can generate that through paid advertising at another fraction of the cost and deliver the whole costing down. So you know, we can, you know, and this was the USP of what we've seen. And yeah, we was like, this is what we need to be the best at. It's you know, rather than just kind of releasing brand awareness at a really high price, which is still great. I'm not knocking influencer, but you know, if you can deliver something slightly more conversion analytical orientated to deliver real hard sales at a lower cost, brands just fall in love with it.
Yeah. So can you just explain broadly what this one service you offer looks like? What is it?
So it's UGC advertising, in essence, if you want to put it in short. So essentially we go out, we find content creators, who would ideally match the demographic of your brand. And we get a group of content creators to create content based upon scripts. Once we've sourced and edited this content, we then bring it into the ads managers. We'll obviously have your awareness, your consideration and conversion phase set out. We'll have different scroll stoppers. We'll have different call to actions. We'll create a large amount of variations of content using different content creators and scripts and so on and so forth. And then obviously pushing this out through Meta, through TikTok, through Snapchat, Rumble, YouTube, Google. We touch all bases in regards to ads. So obviously we'll pick the correct ads manager that we feel is most relevant to your business. If you have somebody on TikTok that is doing really well and you think that person really matches my brand, but my audience isn't on TikTok, we take that problem away. We take that kind of single point of failure out of the equation. And then we'll launch a very targeted, optimized ad campaign. Starting from the top of the funnel, going all the way down to conversion, app install, lead, whatever that specific goal of the customer is, and that's literally it. That's the strategy that we sell. So we'll find the content creators, we'll talk about your brand, we'll put it in front of the right people who are most relevant, and that's basically it.
Yeah, I mean, if you strip it right back, you're just targeting the people that you know. Want to know this stuff, you know. It's and I think a lot of people in the industry lose focus of that, you know, and you know they focus on lots of things all over the place. But in essence, it's let's get that content in front of the right people.
Most definitely, and you know the world's changing very fast, and you know UGC isn't just for ads. You know we do a lot of content production for people that we send over, and they may manage the ads. They may want the UGC to use in email marketing. They may want it for organic. They may want it for PR. You know, I've just recently been talking to somebody who owns a hologram business, and they're looking at installing these holograms into shops. One conversation that got led was having the content creators in the hologram talking about the product right next to the product, and the content creator switches out every 30 seconds, 45 seconds. And, you know, you've got virtual reality with an AR, with augmented reality, with UGC and how this is all being integrated. And I've started seeing user generated content. You know, we did a post on it on the agency about people utilizing it for investments and raising money, showing UGC of other people using the products, how it solved the problem. And rather than them kind of pitching to the investors, they're using content creators to pitch to these investors. And, you know, it's, I think it is becoming a real big thing. And, you know, we want to, you know, really be a big part of that, essentially.
Okay. I get the gist of it. Could you just explain how what you're doing differentiates from influencer marketing?
Yeah, so influencer marketing, I would say influencer marketing, imagine you have a set of drawers in front of you. The bottom drawers are glass doors, and you can see straight through and you can see what the prize is. So there's a prize behind all of these doors. The doors above that are wooden doors and you can't see through them. UGC advertising would be like going through the glass door and seeing your prize before you open the door, whereas influencer, you don't know which one you're going for. So what I kind of mean by that analogy is influencer, you hit and hope. You pay X amount, 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 for an influencer to post, or 20 influencers to post within their network, whether it's micros, you know, however it is that you want to kind of push that, on the off chance that their audience is ready and in a position to make a purchase with you. And whereas us, you know, we're taking that content and, like I said, directly paying for it to be in front of the people who we know are active purchasers within certain interests, within a certain niche. You know, the influencer, the majority of their following may be relevant, but what about the other 30% that you're still paying for that isn't relevant? Are you getting a discount on that because that doesn't match your demographic? Are you not? How many sales are they going to get? Well, they don't know. But they have an idea of how many impressions. That's all great, but, you know, your accountant's not looking at social media impressions at the end of the day. You know, they're looking at bottom line. And, you know, that was always a big topic when we were dealing with these big brands. It's like, oh yeah, great, frequency of 3.4 and we've reached, you know, 7 million people, but we've no sales. And it's like, oh yeah, but, you know, and it's I think that's the difference. You know, we can deliver something where we can go, right, we've ran paid advertising on a fraction of the cost using these content creators. We've managed to decrease your cost per result through paid advertising from X amount to this. That's give us an average decrease rate of, say, 40%. Over the next 3 months, over the next quarter of scaling that ad campaign, we can see a further deduction in cost per results of this, delivering you estimated sales of this. The way that we can do it through analytics is above and beyond what any influencer can deliver in regards to data and analytics. It just is. That would be the main differentiator.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting, and I can see in my head how the jigsaw puzzle all fits together on that. Now, regarding your agency, what sort of size is it? Just so people, you know, listening to this can get an idea of the sort of size of the agency.
This is the beautiful part. It varies every week. And what I mean by that is we don't hire full-time staff. We don't have offices. You know, we don't want the liabilities. We don't want insurance and people on PAYE I've ran businesses before and I always remember starting to spend a lot, and sometimes you get some amazing staff, but from my experience, you can't beat just having the best people. Unfortunately, when you start a business, you can't afford the best people. You know, the best people are 80K, 100K. You know, you want 5 of the best people. You don't have £500,000 to start a business with normally, 9 times out of 10, unless you're Donald Trump and borrow £1 million off your mother. But 9 times out of 10, you don't have that sort of money. So we hire the best people all the time, but on a freelance basis, on a we need you here and then. Can you fulfill this? We only hire people that we know. We only hire people that we've worked with. We only hire people that have been highly recommended by somebody that we would work with and they would put their name to. There's a vetting process of how you would be able to work with us. If we don't know you, if we don't, we've never met you, we've never worked with you, if you've not been recommended, we probably wouldn't work with you. And that's not due to us having anything against you. That's due to us wanting to run our agency in a way where we know the client's getting the best result and we don't have to sit in the same room as you looking over your shoulder. We know here's your deadline. We want it done above and beyond expected. And that's how the business runs. So full-time on the books is just myself and my business partner. everybody else is contracted to freelance, whether that's the designers, whether that's people finding content creators for us, whether that's looking at SEO, PR, whether it's, you know, internal things within the business that we need doing, you know, everything's, yeah, so the majority is freelance.
Yeah, honestly, I wish in the past that I'd gone down that route myself, because just the pressure alone is astronomical when you start building things up and scaling. And the model you've built there, it is scalable, you know, without all the added expense and pressure on the business and yourself. But right, so now this is essentially an SEO podcast type thing. So I want the conversation to go more into the SEO side. So for you personally over the years, I mean, what sort of challenges or positive things have you been able to achieve with SEO?
Freedom. If I had to put it up in one word, freedom. As you know, I left home at a young age, as well. You know, I left home at 15, similar time to when I was getting into the industry, and being able to work for an agency as well as learn on the side and start taking on additional SME businesses. You know, I remember when SEO retainers, I was thankful if they were paying me 150 quid, 250 quid a month. You know, I was like winning. I only need three more retainers and my salary's nicely here. And, you know, I was running with the wind. Obviously, as you get older, that soon changes. But yeah, freedom is a big thing. And, you know, being able to automate online presence, in a sense, obviously there's a lot of legwork that comes into SEO, but I'm thinking of way back in the old, in I say the old days, it was only 10 years ago, but I'm thinking back into a decade ago when you could throw a website up, you know, you had Scrapebox, you had the best spinner, you had you know, you're able to find expireddomains.net and, you know, mass start scraping and churning out expired domains to create real site networks, and you'd use a Wayback Time Machine to load up the old versions of the website and have it rebuilt the exact same. And, you know, the ways of SEO where you could rank a site in a very short amount of time with a very short amount of effort, you know, because it was all just software churned out, you know. Yeah, so that to me is what made it exciting and allowed me, you know, I think being in that era of SEO when PBNs and RSNs were a thing, you know, it was about 2 years in, I'd learned a lot of that off-page SEO through those methods. Obviously now methods have changed massively, but the kind of the fundamentals of the skeleton of it, if you will, has kind of stayed the same. And, you know, that was brilliant for me because I then went on to learn, you know, real technical SEO, on-page SEO. And, you know, I remember sitting in an office, can't remember the gentleman's name, but with a person from Unity Media, who was a sister company of an agency I used to work with, Embryo. We used to meet up and he was teaching me a form of SEO of... trying to think of the exact terminology for this type of SEO, but I can't think of it. But I'd gone from such a black hat route of SEO to then going into this kind of white hat phase. You know, it was a really good learning curve for me then to kind of mix the two to cut together and put my little grey hat on and form my own SEO agency. And, you know, doing that with those skills, you know, I was fortunate enough to let that go and sell that at the age of 19. And, you know, I can't think of many industries where you at that time had the ability to do stuff like that. You know, like I said, you had the odd one on on YouTube or whichever, but you know, social media back then wasn't like it is now, where everybody's making money on it, everybody's doing it, and you know, it wasn't that era. So yeah, freedom was a big thing for me. I would say.
Wonderful. Yes. Now, I've always said that if you're doing something for yourself, you can experiment. You can do whatever you want because it's your own businesses, it's your own websites. You can really push the limits of what is achievable. And I think I've done that myself. You know, my websites, you know, they're not a real business. They're just a website's idea. You know, I had quite a few websites where I'd test things and test them beyond where they meant to go to see what the level of, you know, tolerance is. And I think, but then when you've learnt all that, then you go and do SEO on, you know, for clients on a real business, then the mindset has to change. You know, when you're working with businesses, because these are businesses who built a brand up, you know, they've got people working for them, livelihoods are at stake. I mean, the risk tolerance has to be different, do you think?
To some aspects, yeah. But I also think it's like paid advertising. I know I'm going off on a tangent here because we're SEO focused, but you never really truly learn paid advertising until you're running it with your own money. And I always say that. And SEO, I do agree to an essence where with client sites, you have to make sure everything's bang on and you can't test it. But sometimes you can tippy toe around what is right and second guess yourself and second look. And sometimes it's the experiments. Yeah, it might not work. It might collapse. The fortunate thing I've always found with SEO is unless you're doing, you know, some dodgy backlinking, it's pretty easy to reverse out of what it is that you've done and correct yourself, depending on how organized and everything is with regards to what amends you've made on what dates and what changes here. And, you know, I know when I learned SEO, that was one thing that I was forced upon doing was any changes whatsoever. Log that change, because if there's a huge drop in rankings, huge increase in rankings, we have a learning there. We have a viable learning that we can take away. So yeah, I do agree. But then I think there is a slight other side to it as well. You know, I do think there is a slight other side to it.
Yeah, I think it's that knowledge. It's that experience where you can say, well, because of my past experience and because I've done X, Y, Z on my own sites, that this is the sort of tolerance level where, you know, it is a bit of an experiment, but you're sort of really confident that it's not going to have a negative impact on the business. You know, now let's see if it will achieve a positive impact because it's something a little bit different, you know, on that. So do you believe, where does that, in your mind, where does that line sort of fit?
I knew you was going to ask that then in your head, where does that line sort of fit? Where does that line sort of fit? If you can foresee any potential serious danger to the impact of that client's website, because I don't know about you, but when I think of something, I think, okay, I have an idea. Let's play it out like this. Let's play it out like that. Let's play it out like this. Let's play it out like that. And I'll try and work out as many alternations of outcomes and possibilities, and if at all within that kind of scope of analyzing in my head, how could that go? I see, well, it could, you know, could hit the fan. I'd pull away from it there and then and test it on something else and see what your boundaries are, see if you can set up something similar in a similar niche, in a similar industry, or something else with a similar search volume or and competition, and see what the results are like then. See if that harms that site. Don't just wait 3 months either and say, oh, no, I've had really good results. Sometimes these things can take 6 months, 9 months to kick in. Google might, it might be growing, but I think another thing as well is, just to add to that, is how future-proofed is it? You know, for the last seven years, I'd started doing SEO a new way, from my black hat ways, like I said before, to this semantic SEO was the word I was looking for before, to semantic technical SEO. And I think with that, when you're just building, you know, people now call it EAT or EEAT, and they call it this fancy word, but you know, back when it was just the right thing to do. It wasn't called an abbreviation. It wasn't called a strategy of SEO. You know, I remember pitching, and I was talking to this one the other day. We used to call them micro encyclopedias because we didn't really have a word or terminology for it. And I still use that word to this day because I'm so used to using it from the past. And, you know, you kind of become the best at the topic, the industry, the service, the niche, the product that it is that you're pushing out. That's what Google wants to know. Are you the best? Are you better than them? Why? What have you got to show? And it's about ticking those boxes, you know, schema, you know, page speed and a lot of these things, they do really help, you know, schema more so, click-through rate than rankings. But when it comes down to it, are you the expert in presenting this in the best possible way in your industry? I think that's what it'd come down to.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I strip things right back. And I've trained lots of people over the years. And literally, it's just a case of, well, most people, if I'm honest, are just pumping out things that's already been said 1,000 times before in a different way. So why should you be trusted? What, you know, and all these different things. And I think the industry sometimes has got into a mindset of, let's just pump stuff out and then sit back and wonder, well, it's not done anything. Well, you know, if you're just saying what your competitors are saying, just in a different way, why should your pages, why should your content get ranked? You know, and I think the whole mindset behind where we are now and the whole AI integration and everything, you know, I think it's confused a lot of people in the SEO industry. You know, do you personally think if you do strip it right back to then core things, that people start benefiting more from it?
Yes, I do. I think a lot of people, I can't remember if it was actually you I was having this conversation with or somebody else, but as I'm about to say it, it seems to ring a bell. I think a lot of people that I've seen are starting to forget their expertise in a nice way. Don't mean this in a horrible way, but a lot of people are becoming more and more relaxed because they have the help of AI. They have the help of this. And, you know, I always come back to, there's a Brian Tracy book that I love called Eat That Frog. Simple book. If you eat a toad at the start of your day, every other task becomes easier. Do your hardest task first. Write your tasks down. Tick your tasks when you're doing your tasks. Get that self boost of, yes, I've completed it. Move on to the next. Simple, but you forget about it when you're not reading it and you're not taking it in. You know, you think you are, but sometimes you need reminding. I think that with a lot of basic SEO tasks, a lot of people are taking over these SEO sites. They're going straight to content. They're going straight to backlinking agencies, PR agencies, without looking at simple things. I had a client a few weeks back. They launched a website with no sitemap, no robots.txt file. Somehow the website had been de-indexed from the search engines through the server level because the development team didn't know that any of these things were important. Client had 150,000 views a month, traffic, 150,000 visits. I can't remember. It was a large number per week, per month. So it was a large number. Down to zero in 3 weeks. Three weeks. Went, my analytics, it's gone nuts. I was having all this traffic. Now it's gone. Where's it gone? I was like, these are fundamentals, you know, SEO 101, you know. And you know, apparently there was an SEO overlooking this from this development team, and he was an SEO developer, and he'd kind of pass it over. I don't know who, what, where, when. And yeah, I think it's shocking, and I think a lot of people are forgetting the fundamentals, the initials. You know, we used to have a checklist, we used to have a spreadsheet, because even when you've been in the industry 10 years, even we forget. You know, as you'll know, you know, there'll be things, and it's like, oh, I just forgot to. That's why we have these checklists. That's why we have a, you know, to-do list. This is what needs to be done. Yeah, it's straightforward, but just get it on there and just get it done. I do think having a lot of these tools and stuff can be quite bad for the industry because it can negatively affect the other areas that are very important as well.
I think that over the years, a lot of the problem-solving calls I have, I'd say 80% of them are because of something that's that's classed as on the basic level, you know. And I think, what, like you said, when people are so focused on the shiny object syndrome, they forget about the basic stuff because let's face it, a lot of this basic stuff is boring. You know, but it's the foundation of what you need to build upon, and it needs to be done. It needs to be right. And I think as an industry, you know, we do need to start not going back to basics, but looking at the foundations of what a site's built on and working from there.
There's a book for you there, Mark, to the foundations of what a site's built on. But you are right. And Someone very intelligent, very, very intelligent, spoke to me once upon a time, years and years ago. And I'll never forget this, and it always sticks in my mind. You can build the tallest building in the world, I mean, the largest of the large, but if there's no foundations supporting that building, it will collapse. And that results in business, results in personal life, results in everything. And you touched base on it there. The foundations aren't in place, the building's not going to hold. And you know, that can be said for so many scenarios.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it is. And this is, you know, sometimes when I go into agencies or in-house teams, it is those sort of foundations besides the mindset stuff and all that I do see. But sometimes when you're so heavily involved in something, you don't tend to see it. You know, it's not because they're doing something wrong. It's because they're so heavily involved in something. And I think sometimes you need to take a step back and what you're doing. But, I mean, just talking to you, it's just remarkable that I'm sat here talking to somebody that's 25 and all the experience you've had over the years, which, you know, goes beyond what a normal 25-year-old in this industry has. You know, and what advice do you have for the more younger generation, because I'm like past it, I'm nearly retired, so I can't, you know, maybe I cannot connect the same with the younger generation, but what advice would you give the younger generation in the 20s in this industry who wants to build a career?
One thing that always helped me, and some people might get offended by this, some people might not, people may understand, but just to go all in, one thing that helped me was I used to think, and I still do, we're in a global market with global competition, and there's kids out there in the third world who want to get out of there, and they will fight. And they will fight to get out of there. And a lot of them will fight a lot more than we will, because we're in a comfort world. You know, free healthcare. We're luckily enough to have great service, but from the police and the hospital and all of this. And, you know, we complain when trains are late. And, you know, there's some countries that don't have proper sewage. And, you know, you look at real third world problems, and we're in a global market. And if you have kids out there who are as hungry as you, but have a real fire as to why they need to get out, that's your competition. That's who you're against. You know, look at these UFC fighters. You know, I know this is way off topic to compare to an SEO person, but, you know, I can't remember the name of the Russian fighter that beat Conor McGregor, but he did nothing else but fight and fight and fight. And you know, I've seen videos of him wrestling bears and stuff like that, because that was his will, because he wanted to just focus on that one thing. And a lot of these kids, they're jumping on a computer at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and all they're doing is they're learning digital, they're learning web, you know, they're becoming these experts because that's their way out, that's their ticket out of that old life to help support their families on the new life. And that was a big goer for me. If you want to be good in this world, 8 hours a day isn't enough. 8 hours a day is part-time. 10 hours a day is part-time. Relatively okay if you did it 7 hours a week, 7 days a week. But, you know, I went through a phase and it made me very ill. So you should, you know, obviously, you know, you have to have a work-life balance. But, you know, I went 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I lost partners over it. I lost friends over it. I lost, you know, I cut a lot of people out of my life, and I'd never recommend that. But, you know, that was the road that if you want to really, really know what you're doing, sometimes you do have to make a little bit of sacrifice. And sometimes you have to cut a little bit of yourself off to be able to grow more. That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. I mean, just a short story based on what you've said there. I had a guy approach me a few years ago from Nigeria. And he said, I have to turn things around for my family. Please, could you mentor me? So we had an agreement where there were no money exchange, but he didn't want me to just give him free mentorship. So he said, let me know what I can do for you in return. So we had this type of agreement. And I was mentoring him on building up an affiliate site. Now, that person put his heart and his soul, and he really, really grafted into doing things right. And I'd say about 18 months later, he sent me an email saying, you've helped me to change my family's life. I've just sold the website for 10 times what my annual salary is. That has changed my family's life. And that story just stays with me. It wasn't because of me. I mean, I just pointed him in the direction. It was him himself who made it happen. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, you can give them the golden ticket on what to do, and they won't do it because there's always something else they need to be doing that's more important. And I think you need to devote things. You need to put the graft and energy into it, because there's no trainer in this world, there's no coach or speaker that's actually going to do it for you and has that magic wand. And I think a lot of people assume that, you know, and but at the end of the day, you need to really put your heart and soul and effort and graft into it.
Yeah, you couldn't have said that any better. I know people that I've tried helping out over the years. Some people just can't be helped. You know, other people won't let that opportunity slip by, and they will make the most of it, like your example there. And there is two sides of the spectrum. There really is. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I mean, that as far as you're concerned, what does your future hold?
In regards to what would you say? Sorry.
So, in regards to, you know, the work, the industry, the, you know, the work future.
I used to always have these plans and goals and ambitions, and you know, I was money crazed when I was younger, and that was a big reason into it. I've seen a lot of people with wealth, and obviously I didn't come from wealth, and I always wanted that. And then I soon came to realize, only within recent years, last 3 years, 4 years, 3 years, life's not about that. Like, life's really not about that. You know, I wanted to be the best at something because of something else. But when it comes down to it, you know, I loved what I did, but there was always that other goal of, I want financial freedom. I want houses here. And, you know, I want nice things. I want to live a nice life, you know, but, you know, like I said, it's this getting older maturity stage of things where you kind of come to realize and you go, actually, no, I don't want that. And for me at the minute, you know, I used to go, right, I'm going to do this. But my only goal at the minute is to grow our business. We have a beautiful business, an amazing business, really healthy business. You know, we do superbly well. We work with some amazing brands. There's always something new, you know, whether it's a new brand or a new role. You know, like say if I've come across a task and we're doing it more than once, it's repetitive. You know, I get to build some software customized just for us, and you know, it's doing what I love. You know, being able to ring my business partner at whatever hour, going, look at this spreadsheet I've just built. It connects into this, and it creates these documents. And you know, I've used Google Cloud to then integrate this, and it's coming straight through the website. And you know, I've built some crazy things through the Google workplace. And you know, it's that buzz that keeps me going at the minute. So, to answer your question, where does the future of your work go? I don't know is the honest answer. I'm going to keep doing what I love. I'm going to keep focusing on this agency. It's been one of the best decisions I've made in a very, very long time. And I'm working with an outstanding person who really does know his stuff in his field and his area, and brilliant to work with. You compare this to where I've been in other places at other times, I'm not in a bad place. Very, very, very much so. You know, I've had times in my life where I have been in a very bad place. So, the honest answer is keep doing what I'm doing what I'm love. Someone comes around and offers me a ridiculous amount of money for the agency, hey ho, that might be the end goal. But I don't see that day coming anytime soon. So it's just cracking on and doing what we love.
Wonderful, wonderful on that. Now, is there anything you believe the audience needs to know, but we haven't spoken about yet?
Well, I believe, is there anything the audience needs to know that we haven't spoken about yet? I think it's a brilliant question. And I think it's looking more into this Web3 realm, you know, the whole crypto blockchain realm, and obviously, it's been massive. Obviously, we've gone through a crazy bubble with regards to currencies. But I think keeping an eye out on the fundamental businesses, you know, look at the dot-com world. We had the bubble with the domains. Everybody wanted a cars.com, mobile, whatever the domain was, houses.com and all this stuff. You know, that was the phase. They went for stupid amounts of money. Same with cryptos, coins and so on. And gone through these phases of, is this going to be the next coin? Is this going to be this? as the wave, the tide sort of settles out, I think you'll start seeing a lot more fundamental businesses coming alive. And I think marketers need to keep a good eye out on this, because there'll be new ways on how things are pushed and how this translates into social and what gets seen. It's gonna cause a big era. And I think just to keep an eye on that, don't kind of think because Bitcoin's halved, it's going away, dot-com bubble burst, look at it now. I think just keep your eye on it. Obviously, AI is at the core of everybody's eyesight, so I don't need to touch base on anything on that, because it's all I ever see on my LinkedIn. Oh, ChatGPT prompt, have a look at this. And it's like, yes, thank you for telling me how to search something, and sometimes it can be really helpful, but so there's already a lot of AI stuff going on, but I think looking at the Web3 fundamental businesses of what's going on and where these platforms are heading and going to, I think that's just something to keep an eye on.
And on that, what sort of conversations would you like to have to people, and where can they find you?
I will have a conversation about anything. You catch me on a good day, I can talk for England, and you'll wish that you never spoke to me. Love talking marketing, obviously. I like talking business, but I do prefer marketing and sales and user journeys and ads and SEO and just I've categorized it at the agency as performance marketing, the whole kind of, how can we grow and scale, I love scaling. So yeah, and I'm reachable on LinkedIn. Very friendly, got WhatsApp. Apart from that, I don't have another social media platform. But yeah, LinkedIn, more than happy. I always answer anybody at any time, and I'm always happy to catch up for a coffee or whichever. Just let me know, and we make it happen.
On that note, Corey, many thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.